This summer, saddle up with the only sportsbook where you can bet on horse racing, FanDuel. Right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $500. Just download the app or go to FanDuel.com/horses to score your no-sweat bet up to $500. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Offer valid on first real money wager of $5 or more. Verified FD racing account required. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable racing site credit that expires 7 days after issuance. Max refund $500. Restrictions apply. See terms at racing.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
I hope that no more of our kids die.
No, Pierce Brown laid some groundwork of there's a lot of kids that could, like, they have a lot of kids.
That's so horrifyingly true.
Welcome back, everybody. It's another Tutor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm Richard. And today, we got a special guest.
Andrew.
From Give Reads. Woo!
Andrew here is both an author, which we'll get into a little bit, and he has his own BookTube channel, Give Reads.
Go ahead, check him out. His link will be in the description below, you guys.
And before we let Andrew talk, let's just premise this with we're talking Red Rising today. We're talking about the finale, but we won't talk spoilers initially. We'll get 5 to 10 minutes of non-spoilers asking, hey, what's Andrew's rankings of the book? Who would like these books if you haven't read it? And then after them, we'll get into deep spoilers.
Spoilers on all of it. So exactly. You need to have been caught up to date.
Yes.
Red Lightbringer.
We will give the warning, and notice how I said all that. Like, I'm going to ask Andrew the questions. Finally, I get someone
you
else.
Get someone else, yeah, to bounce things off of.
Oh, yeah.
Don't like my negative energy.
Not just do I not like it, I hate it. And not only do I hate it, Andrew is our first reappearing guest ever on this podcast. So
we tricked him twice.
Before we get specific to the Red Rising, I just wanted to ask from your point of view, Andrew, the first time you were on here, we had 500 subscribers. Richard had more hair and I had more dignity.
How could I have more than zero?
Less than zeros exist. There's infinite regression.
Okay.
Anyways, now that you're back on, like, what do you think's changed?
I was about to make fun of you guys because I just realized that when I was first on the channel, you guys didn't used to say your names in the intro, and it took me forever to figure out which one was which. I had to do it through, like, deductive reasoning. So when you guys started, you're like, I'm Austin, I'm Rich. I was, like, so proud. I had such a YouTuber, like, proud moment. I was like, how far they've come.
Look, we're trying to mimic your lights and everything. We have, like, a shit.
Oh, yeah, no. Look at that.
Like, Andrew, people that know, you're also a gaming YouTuber. So he has a bigger channel where he's more of a YouTube setup and going into the BookTube space and author space. So you know what you're doing here, but we're slowly learning. We're getting there. And let's get the conversation started with Andrew. Quick ranking, spoiler-free wise, of the books. What's your favorite? And I know you're just finished Lightbringer, the recent one that came out. Did it nail the top for you?
Oh, yeah. So the decision between the top for me is between Lightbringer and Golden Sun.
Okay.
And I waffle on them. I think it's Lightbringer, but I think that I love Golden Sun because Golden Sun is like the one that shows you what the series is going to be.
Right.
Right. Red Rising almost is a little bit different from the rest. Like, it almost feels a little YA-y at times, I feel like.
Oh, for sure.
And you're like, oh, okay. And then Golden Sun's like, hey, cool. He grew up now. Ready, set, go. And you're like, oh God, where are we going? And I love it for that. Like, yeah, the scene in the banquet lives rent free in my head from Golden Sun. Mm-hmm. It's like one of my favorite scenes I think I've ever read. But I think that Lightbringer, I think, is just beautiful. It's like infuriatingly beautiful. So for me, it's like Golden Sun and Lightbringer are one and two.
Got it. Hey, in the spoiler section, maybe, is we didn't love Lightbringer as much as you.
Yeah,
but
we'll talk about this.
We'll talk about this. But yeah. I am on board. Golden Sun's my favorite of the series. Rich, is that your?
It also is mine. But I will say, I think Lightbringer is also my second favorite.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it would be Dark Age.
No.
Really?
No.
Your rating says otherwise.
Did it? Yeah. Oh. I'm going to have to go back.
Yeah.
Full on the system.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did. Actually, yeah, you're right. Maybe it is recency bias, though.
Might be.
Because I'm just thinking of the emotions from it is there's some catharsis right there. But
yeah, there's some huge catharsis. I also think that in some ways, I did not like Dark Age very much. And I thought that Lightbringer made me like Dark Age more.
Okay.
Maybe. I remember just loving Dark Age because it was such a step up for me from Golden Sun. Iron Gold.
Yeah, Iron Gold. Iron Gold is the weakest.
We can all agree on that.
We all agree.
But I also think that it's like impossible for it not to be the weakest because like of where it is in the arc of the story.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
For one, he's introducing new characters that you are in the perspective of. And Darrow is such a force of nature, and you've gone three books in Darrow's head that everybody else just feels empty compared to him, right? Like, which is sort of the point. Because Darrow is this like one in a million guy who leads a revolution that like changes the universe. He has to be sort of special.
Right.
But then you're like riding along in like more normal people's heads and you're like, okay.
Not as cool.
Yeah. Right?
Well, then for people who think we're talking nonsense right now of like, oh, what's Red Rising? Andrew, do you have a good pitch for people that want to get into this series? And who do you think would like this? Would they like similar books to Red Rising if they're looking to get into this sci-fi?
Man, that's a great question. My pitch for Red Rising is, well, I think an author that I know, like another indie author who is very successful, has sold a ton of books, like, and he knows what he's doing. He said to me once, we were talking about Red Rising, and he said that I think Pierce Brown might be the voice of our generation in terms of like authors. And that kind of stuck with me for a while. Like, I think that Red Rising is just like incredibly surprising in how much he gets out of what it is from like the premise. It starts off like with such a simple idea, and like the depths that it goes to are like really special in my opinion. And I think that it's written in a way that anybody can appreciate it. Like it's beautifully written where like I said, part of it feels YA, but it's not YA. But I think you could read it as a kid or as an adult and get something out of it. I think if you like Sun Eater, if you like Name of the Wind, if you like, what else we got over here?
Hunger Games.
If you like books, if you like reading,
I think that anybody who likes any of those will find something that resonates in there.
I was gonna say, you as an author, you mentioned this off camera, but you said at one point, I don't know whether I was watching you on a video or you said this to me, I forget which, but you were saying that it is frustratingly annoying that Pierce Brown's prose is, you like it so much, you like the sense that it gives you, that when you're writing your own book, you start to use that present tense in your face. It's just so exhilarating, exciting to write. You find yourself as an author changing your voice because you just finished reading a Red Rising book.
Yeah. First person present is like kind of like a rule break, right? Yeah. Like nobody writes like that. So when I first started reading Red Rising, I was like, you're not allowed to do that. And then like seeing what he gets out of it is so cool, because it is, you feel action in a way that I don't think very many other writers can do. When Darrow is in the middle of a battle, you're in it. It's happening at that moment. That I write first person present most, or first person past, right?
Yeah.
And that has that like still that sense of like inherent implied surviving,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I did this thing. It has been done. It is completed, and I'm still here telling you this. No matter how good of a writer you are, you cannot remove that implication from the English language from it. And first person present is like, he's in it right now. And that just changes everything. I find myself wanting to write it. I'm going to do something in first person present because it's just so cool. The rules you can break with it.
Yeah.
I'm like obsessed with it. I've seen a couple other authors are starting to experiment with it too. Like Will of the Many is also first person present. And,
oh, can't wait to read that.
Oh yeah. That has to be next month or the month after that.
I really like Will of the Many, but like obviously the thing that a lot of people say is like, hey, this feels in the vein of Red Rising, and I agree, but in a good way, right? Like I feel he read it and was like, oh, this is dope. Like you know, I think that Pierce Brown has almost created a new style, and people have been like, oh, this is really cool, I want to play with this too. And that's how I feel about it. That's how I read Will of the Many. I was like, oh, this gives me Red Rising vibes in the best possible way of like, you're playing with some of that like stuff that he's been playing with and like moving the pieces in your own way. And so I think it's really transformative, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see more and more people doing that.
And that's what you mean by voice of our generation. Just
if
he's just the difference between I killed ruthlessly or I kill ruthlessly. Like you're doing it right, and stop. Don't kill me. Like stop it. It's so good, Rich. I know you're less hyped about Red Rising in general.
Like it. I like it a lot.
That's fine.
That is fine. But Andrew, hold on.
I want to spread some negativity.
No. He is only on here to 2-on-1 your ass, okay?
No. Let's get to ask questions too. Andrew, we talked through all the praises. What is your least favorite Red Rising book? Non-spoilers. We'll get into a little later.
Iron Gold.
Okay, what would be above that then? Because I think that's most everyone just mainly because of pace and there's some other things, but out of those.
I would have normally said Dark Age. Now I might say Red Rising. Because like I said, I think that Lightbringer made me like Dark Age more.
Okay. Because that seems the bottom two generally are Iron Gold and then the first book. That's what I typically say, like based on Goodreads and all the people, which you don't
take. There was some magic to Red Rising. The thing about Red Rising is I think that as you read the rest of the books, Red Rising gets worse.
But when
you're reading Red Rising for the first time by itself, it's incredible.
Mm, I like how you put that.
It does the same thing that I think like Dresden does really, really well, which is like the zoom out, right? Where the world gets bigger. And so like the first couple Dresden books, they're not as good once you know what's going on, because you're like, oh, we're playing in the shallows, right? And you're like, cool. That's not satisfying. But when you're reading it for the first time and you have no idea how deep the water gets, it feels big.
That makes sense. So, yeah, the scale.
Red Rising just suffers from that. Like later, they're laying siege to planets, and he's like, "I'm in school," and you're like, "Okay, cool." You know, like it's not.
I hate that's an accurate representation of me. Like, Red Rising's still my second favorite behind Golden Sun, and that's why it's like we are in school. It's fun.
I think some of the character work in it is incredible.
Yeah, right?
And the foundation that it lays, like I think he really pays it off. It's just that once you know where it's going, like if you reread it, you're like, ah, yes, but like. One day this man will be the terror of the galaxy, and instead he's like, how do I do this? You know what I mean? It's just like the scale is so different that it's hard for it to measure.
And before we get into spoilers, obviously if Andrew convinced you, we convince you to go try out Red Rising. Beyond that, I want to give Andrew a second for your own books that you've published. You're an author.
I am an author, yes. So I write urban fantasy. I write a series called The Deck Collection. The premise of the series is the main character is a normal vanilla human who has a really terrible life. And on his birthday, a demon comes to him and says, hey, we can fix your life, give you a perfect one. For 10 years of bliss, all it costs is your soul. And the main character says, no, thank you. I've seen that TV show. I'm good. Pass. Even I know better than that. And the demon has a little bit of a breakdown. He's really behind on his quota. Things are not going well for him. And he forges his soul in the signature, runs off into the night. And all of a sudden, the main character's life turns around, and he has to figure out how the heck he's going to get his soul back. And the first book is called Soul Fraud. There are three of them available, with the fourth one coming out later this year. And they're a fun time, if I do say so myself.
That was a great pitch.
That was a great pitch.
You
almost
had that
like
down,
you practiced.
Down to a T.
It's almost like I've done it before, right?
Rich, can you mimic him and pitch the book club real quick before we go into spoilers? Let's see if you can do better.
Hey, if you like hearing us talk about books and you want to get in on the conversation, why don't you click the link down in the description below to join our Patreon to get an exclusive link to our Discord where we talk about books with you. It's a great time. Once a month, we go over a book that you all vote on. Join us and have a fun time.
Yeah, that was all right. All right, spoiler time. Here we go.
So far, I'm so proud. I'm like a happy YouTube dad right now.
At the end of this discussion, we'll have a little bit about like an advice section. We'll have a little bit of that. All right, spoilers. So this is everybody's warning. We're going to spoilers for predictions on where Red God is going. The last Red Rising book. All right, click off if you don't want to listen to spoilers. Are you guys ready?
Or you don't care.
Or you
some
don't
of
care.
You monsters I'm don't so care excited. About spoilers, which disturbs me, but you guys do.
A fundamentally broken thing. But, live your life.
All right, first thing to talk about. Going into Lightbringer, do we think Darrow's surviving?
Or going into Red God?
Going into Red God, do we think he's surviving?
Yes.
That is such a great question. I think that he does. But I do think that it is the question that Pierce is asking, right? Which is like, is there a, is there a world in of peace where Darrow can live?
Right.
Like, can the Breaker build a world that he can be a part of? Right. Like, it's like happening at the beginning, at the end of Morningstar, and it's what he's wrestling through like the rest of the time. So I think that's supposed to be the question. But yes, I think he has to.
I think we're all in agreement. I also think he lives.
I think there's one key reason on why he lives, story reason.
Give it.
I think it's now twice in a large narrative section where the plot point is Darrow is missing or assumed dead, and the rest have to get around it. And then we've already seen how the Republic gets along with Darrow either missing or they think he's dead. We've seen that now twice. I think just actually making him dead is not as impactful as it could be. Like, I'm just imagining, they all think he's dead, he's all missing, and then he actually dies. It's like, well, not much changes for them. I don't know. Narratively, I just don't think it works.
And really, he's beginning what is like a phoenix-like ascent, right? He's mm-hmm. been sort of, even in Dark Age, like, he was trapped, he was cornered. Like, he has not been Darrow on the offensive for, like, three books, essentially.
I'm kind of seeing a pattern, a good pattern. There's patterns in stories, and that's what makes them good, is that you're not just freeballing everything. But in Pierce's first trilogy, so Red Rising all the way to Morningstar, that, compare that to, what do you call it, a quad trilogy? The four that are currently...
Quadality?
The four that it's going to be. Yeah, quadality, whatever.
I don't know.
But
what would it be?
Quintology.
Quadrilogy.
That's five.
Quadrilogy. yeah.
Yeah, quadrilogy. I'm an author. You have to trust me.
Yeah, we trust you. So Red Rising, compare that to Iron Gold, the first book in each series. They're very much your intro, your introduction. And your second book in each series, you have your Golden Sun and Dark Age are both your Empire Strikes Back. All is lost. Ending is the bad guys won. And then take that, and I'm taking Morningstar, and think of Lightbringer and Red God as one long book, because it was originally supposed to be one book, but he made it one long book. Halfway through Morningstar, big character dies, Ragnar dies, and then we get the latter half of the book. End of Lightbringer, which is would be half of the books combining them, Cassius dies, going into the rest of the book. So I think Red God is more so going to have this pattern of, we're not going to get, like, and then End of Morningstar wasn't very bittersweet. It was a pretty good ending, like a very happy ending. So I think God's still going to, he's still going to throw your curves in there and still have a sad moment. But I think it's going to end way happier than we'd expect based on how he ended the first series and the pattern he did with the everything's lost, your heroes are done. But guess what? It's going to end okay.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
That holds up for me. I see it.
But the better, how I want it to end, how I want the series to end is... Lysander has that weapon, the nuke.
The enemy?
Yeah.
Well, hold on. I have it. I wrote things.
Not like you could pronounce it, though. You could look at your notes.
Oh, I just put bioweapon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You didn't even try.
E-D-I-M-I.
Enemy. A part of me hopes that enemy is used on the golds and the reds, all of society, and the epilogue is Quicksilver and Mateo going... We were right all along. And then he looks at the screen and goes, maybe I'm the Red God. Cut credits. That's if it ends like that, Pierce, you are the author of our generation. That is perfection.
That's
he leaves the call.
No, I mean, on one hand, like the fact that the colors are not considered Homo sapiens. Is like an interesting argument to that, right? That like maybe the new world is they have to start over, and he does a very like Genesis arc kind of thing,
right?
And the point is that society destroys itself eventually, but that is like a much more darker existential thing than I think Pierce is writing.
Yeah,
because I think Pierce does like think that like one of the most interesting things about the second quadrilogy is the way that the government eats itself, right?
Right.
Everybody's serving their own interest. It like. Corruption spreads at like undeniable pace, and it is everywhere and in everything.
Yeah, that never happens in real life.
Never. It's actually very Joe Abercrombie to me, where like, you know, because what was the second series he did? Where
keep
like,
it spoiler free. I haven't read the second series, and he hasn't read the first.
But I'm just think he messes with that kind of thing of like different types of government rising and like showing that they all are the same underneath at a certain point.
Yeah,
and so. That's an argument towards your, like, maybe yeah, it's, you know, the silver Regulus Ag Sun actually, like, is the salvation of mankind, and it's, we go back to what we were.
But kind of that, not spoiling these movies, but kind of like a City of God movie. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen, like, No Country for Old Men? A little bit of that cyclicalness nature. You know what I mean? But I don't think it's going that direction.
Yeah, I think Pierce still believes in heroes. And in that, like, the heroes have to win for it not to be a tragedy, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so I don't think that they're going to kill off everyone.
No, me either.
However, while I was reading both Iron Gold, mainly Iron Gold, but continue on through the series, when Quicksilver made the decision to just leave, I was like, you know what? I get it. Yeah. I completely understand.
Fair.
I don't hate. I'm like, he made the most logical decision given the chess pieces on the board.
For sure.
Like, I also don't see how you have a standing up, like, any type of piece with the core golds just existing. Like, honestly, golds in and of themselves is, it's almost inevitable. Like, the Republic showed how, yeah, you can have a Republic and you can have this representation, but at the end of the day, the golds basically ran it all anyway.
Mm.
Most of them, like, they had all this disproportionate power and then they abused it. It's like, man, what the hell are you supposed to do with them?
Yeah.
And then the enemy came in and the bioweapon. I'm going, I see one solution and I don't particularly like it.
No.
Yeah. I will say, I don't know what he's going to do with enemy. Like, it's an interesting, it is not what I would have expected him to do. So right. I am not sure how it's going to play in to Red God.
Question for you on that. Do you think there's a chance, we saw in Lightbringer, that Pierce kind of dropped the thing in Lyria's head that, what was it? The voice in the bacterial whatever thing. Do you have a theory about that?
I actually do.
Okay. So kind of, do you think that's dropped or do you think that's continuing?
It's also Figment.
Figment. Yeah, Figment.
So
yes.
I don't have the theory. I have gained the theory from Reddit.
What's the theory?
I completely agree with it.
Okay.
Basically, the Figment was not actually the, when Mateo started the conversation with Lyria, telling her about Figment, the one in her head was the prototype and basically had all these memory problems and all this stuff, but that it was made to keep, they destroyed it all so they couldn't get the actual final version and not use it because that was too dangerous. And when Mateo asked Lyria, are you willing to sacrifice your memories and your personality for this power? And she said no. That was a test. There was a test for her. Like, is she is the right type of person to have that power? And so, why did Mateo? So after they took it out of her, they took the prototype out, and they kept her around, and they still were doing tests on her.
Yeah.
After it's been removed for several days. My guess is they removed the parasite one and then they put in the final one and were running tests to make sure that that one wasn't having any memory problems as well and then sent her off.
Mm.
Do you think that she's the Red God?
Oh,
I don't know.
I'd be a little pissed, but yeah.
I would be a little, I'd be a little upset.
But also fair play. Yeah.
But no, I think she's probably gunning for a role, a better role with more diplomacy because she's been interacting with all the colors in a more in-depth way, which I quite like. That's one of the biggest parts I like about Lyria's POV.
Yeah.
It's one, I don't particularly like Lyria herself as much.
She's best when she's with other cast.
But she has a deeper understanding of more of the colors because she spends a lot of intimate time with them.
Like, her and Cassius was great.
Yeah, exactly. But she's moving.
That was so good.
She's moving through all the colors. I think she will have a more diplomatic role, and the Figment will be able to augment her, basically put her in our even playing field, and, you know, being able to work with everyone.
That
in a more intimate way than the artificially allows her to connect with other colors that other colors are not able to.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it makes her separate. It almost removes her from the whole color cast system so she can actually be in touch with them. I don't know. But that's my current theory. She has the final version of Figma in her head.
That's a great theory.
Because the the alternative to that is Pierce Brown just dropped it. Yeah, and like, and I don't like this.
Right.
And got rid of it.
Yeah, that inner voice in me is just going, man, Pierce dropped this. He didn't talk about Abomination much. And if Red God pays off, my Abomination makes sense that that was a plot point, and that Lyria's Figment makes sense as a plot point. Because the biggest thing as a reader, you want your something you're promised is, okay, this was, I read this. That means I read it for a reason. It's going to pay off somehow. And then if it's just completely dropped, there's a little bit of that, oh, why'd you make me read that then, right?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
If it does pay off in that way, oh, Pierce, I was wrong. I was wrong. Andrew, do you have, what you agree with that theory? And do you have any crackpot theory like that that makes sense? That was a great one.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the best one, because I'd say the thing that is the most unpredictable at the moment is Figment and Edemy, right?
Yeah.
Because in the other one, the players are sort of set. The thing that I like about Lightbringer is it convinced me to hate Loon, right?
Yeah.
Because he went through such a like a pitiable thing, right? In Golden Sun, where he's the fan of the Reaper, you have just sort of this like, oh, he's just a kid, and like he's been stuck in this bad situation, right? And then he goes off with Cassius, and you're like, okay, there's hope for him, right? And even as you're writing in his head, some of his decisions make sense, right? Like he is still a part of the old system, but he's like not evil until the end of the book, where he finally crosses a line that you're like, oh, okay, right? Like up until then, I understand how he got, if I'm cornered by Atlas and he's like, do this or die. Bro, like Atlas is like one of the most terrifying villains I think ever, in a great way, where he was not the main villain, he was just like he was a side villain who was actually terrifying, right? Like that, and that's like really unusual. Usually you waste that, you don't waste that on your like
side
villain, right? But Atlas was like a bishop in chess terms. But he was a terrifying bishop the whole time.
And our most fun bishop is the Minotaur. He's just a fun villain.
Oh yeah.
Oh, he's my favorite villain out of all of them, because he's just he eats the page time.
Yeah.
Oh, I love him.
His dialogue.
Fantastic.
Right.
Yes. No. And just like the melodrama. I think Pierce's melodrama is so great, because like the fact that this is like hard sci-fi that is just like, anyway, we're gonna be super mythologically dramatic now, it like just works, is so much fun. My crackpot theories, I don't think that I have a crackpot one, because in a lot of ways, Darrow is usually a hammer, right? And so it's like, Darrow has gone and reinvented himself, and he's ascended to become somehow even more dangerous. And he's teamed up with Diomedes, who I really like. Diomedes, he's a great character.
Oh yeah.
And now he has reinforcements and he's coming. And
right.
To me, like the Red God is the implication of like the advent of the Red God, like woe to all of you because judgment is coming, right? You have, what's the line in Iron Gold that, or in Dark Age that everybody likes? Where he's like, I've given my life towards saying that all men are created equal, but the kingdom of death has a king, and its name is not Loon, it is Reaper.
Yeah, I think you got it spot on. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Right? I mean, it's a pretty hard line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, so that's like, to me, what Red God is like, just give us what we want. Like, you know, he's going to appear. I think the more crackpot stuff will be whatever they're dealing with on Mars itself.
Do you think plot-wise that the battle will be a majority of the book? Or do you think it will happen latter half, starts us off? Where do you think he's starting off Red God?
I think that they liberate Mars, but I don't think that's the end.
Okay.
Because somehow he has to kill... which of the Furies is left? I can't even remember her name.
We have Atlantia?
Atlantia. Yeah, he has to kill Atlantia. And then he has to kill Lysander as well. And I don't think he'll do those at the same time. I think Lysander will be the last one standing, right?
Final boss.
I agree. Yeah.
He'll break the sovereign. He'll break like the not the sovereign. She's the dictator. He'll break the dictator, and the core golds will be in pieces, and Lysander will be there to pick up the pieces, and like, you know, the second coming of the Lightbringer, who will save us all. And then he will step up to the Red God, and he will get his final act will be getting vengeance for Cassius, right? That'll be the final like conflict.
Got it. Well, then you have like the small pieces like Abomination. How does he fit into this? And Minotaur, like, what are his intentions? And those,
I have a personal crackpot theory.
I love it.
Oh, I'm into it.
This one, I just think it fits too well. So first off, I think the first half of Red God is going to be mostly focused on Mustang and Atalantia. That's going to be the kind of big power struggle we're going to see. Yeah. And we're going to see maybe some switch in size. Maybe Lysandre's going to be working with Mustang in the very beginning to go against Atalantia to break her. Like, because she won't know everything that Darrow has, because Darrow's kind of still stuck in the half. He's coming, but they don't have communication yet. Then I think we're going to see them win, and they're going to win with the help of the Abomination.
Uh-huh.
And my biggest theory here is the Abomination is going to be redeemed. I feel it very confidently that Mustang is going to save her brother. Because you see, like, at the end of Morningstar, she feels bad for having to actually kill her brother, and she acknowledges that, hey, he is the way he is because of a terrible upbringing. He had a terrible upbringing, but he's, at heart, he does have some positive qualities that was twisted and manipulated in the wrong way. This is her opportunity to actually raise her brother correctly. And he's not the same. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hold the sins of his predecessor. He is his own man.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
So also, I think he will go against Loom.
Yeah.
He's not in Lightbringer at all, is he?
No.
He's vaguely mentioned.
He's mentioned because he had several and sold several to the Minotaur.
That's right.
And yeah, there's the theory that I don't think holds as much weight. Maybe it's there, but that he used the chair, the Morningstar chair, to basically plant mind control in Sevro's mind to have an inside man against Darrow. And that's why he sold Sevro to the Minotaur. Because a lot of it doesn't make sense. Like, why the hell would, you know, why would he sell Darrow's closest friend to the Minotaur?
There's got
to
be some
kind of silly for him to do it.
Right.
But
that question, though, of possibly redeeming the Jackal and Abomination, there's this question is in the first trilogy, and it's in this, of who is redeemable. Because Andrew, as you said, Lysandre, no matter what he does,
dead,
right?
Dead.
He's
You
can't. There's not a chance that he's redeemed.
Well,
not a chance.
He is redeemable, right?
Yeah.
Like some of the stuff that I think Pierce is so good at, is that the man who killed Ares became trusted, like he was redeemed.
So you don't think he could do it with Lysandre? That's what you're saying?
I don't even think it's not that he maybe could be redeemed. It's not even that. It's just it would be stupid to leave him alive. Like, maybe he's nicer, but absolutely not. He can't be allowed to live.
This is what I felt about Tactus in the first trilogy. A lot of people saw him as redeemable. I
thought he was redeemable.
I did not. I did not.
Yeah. Pierce saw him as redeemable, too.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Lauren later says, I don't think I should have killed him.
Correct. And right. But the way I took that message when I first finished Golden Sun, I hadn't read the future. I was like, Lorne said, man, I take that back. I shouldn't have ended up killing Tactus. But then at the end of the book, when the whole basically Red Riding and Golden Sun form happens, everybody's dead. I took that message of, wait a second. There are certain people like the Jackal, all these people that betrayed you, that there are certain irredeemable people. And I was taking it in that way. And then I thought that Darrow will come in much more rageful in the next book. That was my poor expectations going into it. But I could see in hindsight what Pierce meant to do is you're articulating correctly. That's what he planned to do, is have Tactus be redeemable. I read it that Tactus did one too many things. Like, man, you screwed them over multiple times. You tried to rape somebody in book one. I'm thinking of that stuff going,
yeah.
Like, and then for a second you played your violin. And like, or whatever it was, like, now I love you. Sorry, you seem as redeemable. But I'm just going, no, like, screw you, Tactus. I took it. I just didn't like him. So that's the tough thing with an author, to get everybody on board for a redeemable character or not. Like, me and you disagree on that, but everybody agrees Cassius was redeemable.
Right. Like, and also, I think that the point was really less about Tactus and more about Darrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because remember that they were always saying, like, why of all people did Lauren agree to train you when he has not trained anyone since Aja, right?
Right.
Like, what is it about you? And, like, there's a couple lines, Lysandre, I think, says, like, you know, they say that you're the first Iron Gold like in centuries. And a couple people are like, oh, Lauren loves you because you're him, or you're who he wishes he was. And so I think it's really about that moment where Lauren realizes that Darrow has something that he never did, which is that he inspires people to be better. And so he killed him because in his eyes, he was unredeemable.
Yeah.
And then as he's standing there, and then they have that, remember they have that meeting where like, everyone's like, should we trust Victra? And Rock is like, well, Arok is like, if we do not trust Victra, then I will like leave and never be a part of this. And Darrow's just like, everybody shut up. I trust who I trust. And this is what it is. You are my people. Like, you know, and then after that is when Lauren is like, I don't think I should have killed your friend.
Right. Yeah, take that back.
Like, because I see how they look at you. Like, yeah. I realize now that like, this is not how it works for me, but for you, there's something different.
But at the same time, Roke betrayed him afterwards. So how I'm taking that in a sense is like, oh, look at these people. Like the person that's saying, I trust Victor, I'm leaving otherwise. Like that, I was taking the betrayal message, but you're totally right with the tactics was supposed to be redeemable. It's just such a difficult job. That's a harder character arc to do, is to make you hate somebody, then love them, or love them and then hate them and pull them down. Mm-hmm. And
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I don't think we're getting any of those surprises in Red God, because I think you like who you like, you hate who you hate. Maybe we'll get a little switch on Minotaur, maybe. But I can't.
Oh, no.
I can't see it with the Abomination, though.
I feel sadly that the Minotaur is going to be like the half book or like pretty early on death.
Maybe.
Where we're going to get a... I feel like we're owed. We're owed a rematch duel between him and Darrow, and the Minotaur is the
Darrow
place
is gonna
for
tear him to shreds
in like three moves, and that is the opening. That's the way Darrow reveals himself that he's back, is him just cutting down the Minotaur like he's nothing.
Oh, I'd love that.
And that's how everyone like,
bro, that
welcomes
fight
him home.
With Fa is so cool, just because of like the way that you feel Darrow's transcendence. Like,
yeah.
I think the thing that makes Lightbringer so dope for me is that it's really hard for books to do the question of can a breaker become a builder and make it actually interesting, right? I think that's really hard to write, because when you fall in love with the series, it's like, we follow the breaker, right?
Right.
Then they're like, anyway, now I want to rebuild society. And you're like, no, kill some people! and I think that's like the thing that makes Iron Gold awkward, is like Darrow is like all of a sudden no longer the solution to anything, and he doesn't know how to not be the solution, and he falls because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then in Lightbringer, he finds like the middle ground, right? And so it's like him becoming his new self and who he has to be to exist in a better world, because he's burnt it down, but now he has to rebuild it. And so he can't just be the man who burns, but he has to be like this thing in between. And,
right.
Ah, man. As he was just like tearing Fa apart, I was like, oh no, this is so good.
What do you think at the finale's over? We're finished with Red Rising. We know, and I don't know if you guys know this, but after Red God, he's done with Red Rising. He's going to write a fantasy book.
I'm very excited.
That's going to be cool. I can't
wait
to see.
I'll read anything Pierce writes at this point, right?
Right. Imagine that prose in his style. And he's now has a whole series behind him, so he'll assumingly improve even more.
I'm assuming he'll start off at just a more. He knows the trappings that he can get into in the later half of the series, so he will start it off a lot clearer and better. You know, Andrew, you talked about with the first book, it feels very out of place with the rest of the series. It's good on its own, but you know, it feels very out of place. He probably won't have that same trap.
First books are hard, I'll say. Mm-hmm. Like, in some ways, they have to be that, though, because you can't overwhelm people, right? Like, I do think, as much as, like, it sounded like I was maybe criticizing the first book earlier, I didn't really necessarily mean it as a criticism. I meant it as a, like, you're like, hey, welcome to this futuristic scientific world where, like, human beings don't exist anymore, and they've been genetically modified, and, like, their cultures are completely different. And, like, what's the best way to show you that? Well, I'm going to put you in a microcosm of a school and show you, like, their barbarity and their nobility and confuse you and like, muddy it all. Mm-hmm, but right. If he just tried to go straight into, like, Golden Sun, we'd be like, what is happening? Hello? You know, yeah. Like, some of it is just you do have to lay the groundwork. I think Red Rising lays the groundwork wonderfully. It's just that it's a groundwork lay. Like, once you know the groundwork, you're like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you had the same feeling, like very light spoilers on Hunger Games, but Hunger Games book one and Red Rising book one, something that they did different is Hunger Games, for me, when I think back to that trilogy, my favorite book's book one. Like, the Hunger Games was the Hunger Games for that, but after you got out of the games, it was like, okay, this is fine. I got that feeling, this is fine, there's some elements here of Panem, and there you go. But the exciting part were the games, and I think that's why Suzanne Collins brought you back to the games again, round two for the games, because that was what it was all about. But then
the reason is because Hunger Games, from the beginning, you're promised the Hunger Games. Where in Red Rising, you're promised space opera revolution.
Yes.
And you get Hunger Games. And so when you finally get space opera melodrama revolution, you're like, I got what I was set up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when going beyond Red Rising, you get your expectations, you just get more and more of what you're promising. You're feeling great. So once you get out of that YA, I don't want to just say YA because I don't think you should. It's not like for.
It's not a YA book.
YA akin.
But they're 17, right?
Yeah.
It's not YA, but they're 17.
It's 17. So
it just, right.
And it reads like kind of like it. Like, yeah. I've read other YA stories that have a similar storyline, a similar feel. Like, yes. I've seen that before.
Right.
But then they age up, right? And by the end of the series, they're like in their late 30s. So, like, the characters grow as they go.
Yeah. And looping back to that, so the end of Red God was the moral of the story that you were getting into, Andrew. What do you think we're going to be left with? Like, breaking, and can you still rebuild society? Can you make something out of it? Do you think that that's the main message, or what are the messages you think he's trying to get through with this whole series?
Yeah, I think that a big part of it is going to be on Darrow, obviously, because he's the linchpin of it all. And so my assumption is that it's going to end a little bit like Morningstar ends.
Yep.
Where, like, you know, he's on the island and he meets his son for the first time. And he talks about, like, now we're going to build the world that we, you know, we broke everything and now it's time to build it. And I'm going to tell my son the story of, you know, what we did and how we go. I assume that it's going to end something like that. Where Darrow has changed to become, like, we weren't ready to build the first time, but now we are, right? Before I was a hammer, and now or a sword, and now I'm a hammer, or, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And, and you know, the new friends and the new way, like, we're going to continue forward because we must, and because it is right. And it'll leave us somewhere there, right? The bodies of more dictators are dead, and we will go again.
And the exact scene, I think, will be them on a bike. Because you know how that was referenced in Lightbringer? Like, just, man, that Pax's bike, and just want to go on the bike in the sun. It's going to be there, I think.
He has to get on the bike. He referenced the bike a lot. Yeah, he needs to get
100% right. That would be my assumption, is, like, it's all dead. The world's on fire. You know, he's burnt it all down again.
Right.
Now.
But this time with, like.
Sorry, go ahead.
My theory will be, the difference will be this time he has Diomedes buy-in.
Has Diomedes say that? What was that you said?
Like Diomedes took that oath in Lightbringer, right? Which is like, I am going, like, when this is over, we are going to fix this. Right?
Okay. Okay.
I am now an advocate for the low colors. He has changed. And, like, I think that he's, like, what, probably one of the most honorable people in the entire book universe, right?
Oh,
and so he's going to become possibly the linchpin for gold to change. because in some ways they can't accept Darrow as change because they know that he's not them deep down, right? They're afraid of Darrow and they respect his power, but he's not them and they know that.
Yeah.
And so Diomedes is going to be like the rallying point for kind of like how Lysander has the new shepherds. He's going to be the like gold who want to actually fix the problem. And so it's going to be like a more genuine healing. Like, you know, instead of like Mustang's amazing, but Mustang's not the right leader for golds, I don't think.
She manipulates and she can rein them in line, but she doesn't inspire them to be better.
Yes. She can play the old game better than anyone, but it is still the old game. And her heart's in the right place, but Diomedes is almost just like a stone, right? He's just like, no, we will not be doing that. Right. Honestly, if Diomedes is like the sovereign at the end of the series, I would be fine with that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, Diomedes was the sole reason why, like, it gave Lysander a nugget of understandability. Like, I get his perspective with Diomedes. Like, Diomedes is what gold should have
it's
been.
What Lysander it's
still
should
not,
be. Yeah.
Still not ideal. It is still this, you know, hierarchical class system, but the bare minimum, they're holding up to their own ideals and going like, hey, we're actually supposed to, you know, we have all this power. We should actually help others. And
great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. I love Diomedes' point at the end of the book going, hey, look, we were given all these privileges and powers because in that bargain is we're supposed to care for you and to
the
actually
trials
take care of society.
Our social contract. Yeah.
And that's been broken. And it's the most logical part of the goal that I think.
And also what makes Lysander's point of view like, okay, you're aspiring to be this, but you're not turning into that.
You're every time you're given a chance to go in that direction, he goes the old way. He goes toward the golds, just break. And the old
And I think the scene with where Darrow meets with Diomedes and Diomedes' grandmother was super telling, right? The old guard, the pinnacle of old gold that's still alive, the mother of fear herself, who understands what her son is like. You know, there's that chilling conversation where she's like, oh no, I know everything he's doing. Like, and I understand it. Like, it, you know, it is as much as she might hate him. She like, he's my son. Like he is a part of me and he's like, I understand it all. And Diomedes is like, no, we will not be doing this going forward. It is time for you to adapt and not just adapt. You must support me.
Yeah.
And like she breaks and changes and stands for him after she's like swore she wouldn't. I think that's like a very telling moment of like what Diomedes' effect can be, like hope for the future.
Definitely. Definitely. I think here's my prediction as well. I'll toss in this. I think Diomedes will get his own point of view this next book. I think him.
That would be so fun.
I think that would be great. And one more. I want to see if you guys think anybody else, any new characters, because we know we might get our Virginia, of course, Darrow, of course, Lyria. But I think we'll get both Diomedes and I'm almost positive we'll get a Pax. I think we're getting a Pax point of view this next book.
I'm because gonna be a little scared if I get a Pax POV.
Because Darrow might go.
Man.
What are your thoughts, guys, on the Return of the King ending? Because Darrow's been writing this diary, and instead he dies somewhere out the book, and we get an ending with Pax reading his diary and turning to the next page, and Darrow saying, like, the rest of this book is for you, my son. And he starts writing the him building.
I would be more afraid if we got a Pax POV that Pax is dying. Pax suddenly gets a POV and he's like a fighter pilot. Bro. That's like, then the Darrow that's coming is purely like red, like that's Red God. Like there will be no survivors.
Oh, you're right. It could go any of those directions. Pax dies and causes Darrow to just go, Darrow.
Yeah.
Or Pax lives, you have the more happy ending. I think you're right, though. I think we're all in agreement it will lean on the happier ending.
In quotes. I think
happy
Pax...
Red Rising.
Here's the thing. I think Pax has a greater chance at living than Darrow does. If I'm going to bet anything, like, what's the happier ending? That Darrow dies to save his son for the future, or that Darrow lives and his son is dead.
Oh, man. And imagine that, like, the final words are probably something like him talking about going to the Vale to see EO and Dancer and Fincher and all who have gone before, like, you know, and there's some sort of like Valhalla-esque like welcome waiting for him.
Right. I mean, I could also
see it, but I
could exactly. It's kind of that. I love a good bittersweet ending. Morningstar was honestly too happy for me. The ending was it was too positive.
I thought it was so beautiful though, because
it was beautiful.
I love about it is like that final line is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Where he's like, he's talking about Pax, and he's like, as you grow up, I will tell him about the rage of Sevro, the loyalty of Victor. Like, and he names all the characters, because when he did that, it really hit me that like. He nailed all of those characters, right? Like,
got it.
When I think of Victor, I think of her loyalty. Like he actually, it just like reinforced to me how impressed I was by those characters. And like in the way that it summed up, I got a little misty eyed. I was like, oh man, he really did have like this band of people and together they changed the world. And I have so much hope. And I don't know why there's four more books.
And then, oh. Don't turn this around. I like a good happy ending at times, you know, but good bittersweet ending's always my favorite. And there could be a world. I
think I'm changing my answer. I don't think Darrow's gonna survive.
Whoa! What just happened?
What changed your mind?
What the hell?
Richard's argument did. I think that in some ways he can't, because I'm thinking about it. You remember there's in Lightbringer, Virginia goes to see Pax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
and. They have that conversation where she apologizes to him and she's like, we thought that we could give you a better world. And he says, you did. You just gave us a world. We have to struggle for it. And I think that you're 100% right that the ending is that the Red God dies. He accomplishes what he does. And then he leaves the struggle to his son. He made the world better, but it's not done. And now the next generation has to pick up the burden and carry it.
That's the way, because the happier ending is Darrow dying is a happier ending than if Pax dies. If Darrow dies,
Pax dies, then Pax, peace dies. I mean, his name literally means peace.
Yeah.
If he dies, then peace dies.
The only thing I could see is if Pax dies for a bittersweet ending is Darrow can never have that peace of his own. Darrow doesn't have his family and he couldn't save his own family, but he did make the world. He saved the world, but not his own son. That's the bittersweet moment of.
And it would be the second child he lost.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
You guys are forgetting the obvious answer to this.
Oh,
Pax dies, and then Darrow and Mustang adopt the Abomination as their own child.
No, get out. I thought you were going to say, and Darrow and Virginia also die.
They could all die at Quicksilver to save the day.
I'm telling you, my ending with Quicksilver, I'm still rooting for that.
I just loved how all of that where they set up and Darrow's going like, I feel betrayed. All of them going like, they're so disappointed that Quicksilver's leaving. And during that whole thing, I'm going, I've been reading all these books and I'm kind of agreeing with Quicksilver. All of this is just messed up and terrible.
Leave.
The Republic was not good. It was not a good replacement. The society, terrible. Like, it's Quicksilver,
you're
right.
You guys get a little itchy reading like the politics scenes with like the senators where you're like,
oh, God. That was the most.
Oh, this feels a little familiar.
Actually, I wanted to get into, because you mentioned it a little bit before, and this may be where people disagree with me the most, is I really disliked Dancer by the end of it, where I thought it was the one character, I think chiefly, that Pierce Brown either didn't sufficiently answer for me his actions. So in Iron Gold, he was the number one opponent against Mustang on actually fighting and saving the Free Legions and trying to end the war and trying to sue for peace. And Bane just didn't want any more Reds to die. Got it. Understood. That was his reasoning. So what changed? Why did he finally support Virginia? Answer is, he found out that he was going to be blackmailed. And so now he's going to fight against Atalantia. To me, that's not the positive reason for him to change his mind. Someone can, in the comments down below, please tell me if I'm wrong. Am I missing something? Because when I read that, he changed his mind on a very selfish reason, not on the, oh, we actually need to fight back against Atalantia. He knew about all of the problems with it and yet still didn't want to help. It was only when... So, am I wrong, Andrew?
I'm thinking about this because I think my read of Dancer... I'm not sure that I disagree with you, but my read of Dancer was that Dancer was essentially somebody who followed like this trajectory of like he... There's that thing where like people who start movements are often not the person to finish the movement, which is, I think, like a thing that's like a theme in this whole half of the book, like the quadrilogy, right? Because Darrow is almost not that way too, right? Darrow is one of the flames that starts it, and he can't do anything but burn. And that's like the thing. And I think Dancer is that way, but in a different way. Dancer was a Red on Mars who had a dream of participating in this thing where they brought down the thing. Right. And then they get there and it's like, cool, now rebuild it. I don't know that he was really a builder either. And if you think about it, he's probably less educated than Darrow because Darrow at least went through the Institute. Right. So he's scrappy. He's a hero. But should he be like the head of the Vox Populi? Probably not. But how can he not be? Because he's the guy who brought them there. Right. So suddenly he's playing the Gold's game, politics, and he's not a politician. He's in charge of a massive amount of power. And all he sees are the Golds winning again. So I read most of that as him being flustered and out of his element, where like he's a guerrilla soldier. And now all of a sudden he's dueling with, you know, out in the open with like the greatest minds of the generation who are more educated, more experienced, more practiced, and they're eating him alive. And Virginia, like we were saying, is great, but she does not inspire people like Darrow. She manipulates them. So she's manipulating everybody around her towards good, but still in a manipulative way. And so I think what that scene was more about was it was showing the lengths people were going to stop her. Because in his head, she had become the villain. She was the symbol of like Gold staying. We did all this work just to have another Gold sovereign who tells us what to do and where to go and where to die. And this is not what I like my friends and I died for. And so he's trying to just desperately pump the brakes on a thing that he feels like he's lost control of. And then when Virginia's like, look at what they're doing. Like, look at how it's being eaten out from the inside and what I'm actually trying to stop. That's what changed his mind.
And to add
that's
on,
a much better explanation than what I was reading into it. So it,
yeah,
it's
can,
not...
can I throw on for you?
Go ahead.
Because Andrew, exactly what you're saying, because we had commenters on when we reviewed Dark Age, we had a couple comments directly addressed that. And here's one of them. It ties in exactly what Andrew's saying. So very strongly disagree with you about Dancer referring to you. And very strongly, very strongly.
Very strongly.
Actually, he put it in bold, said very, very strongly. So T-Fanny says, Dancer didn't want to go to war because he thought the peace treaty from the Ash Lord and Julia of Bologna was sincere. He thought that they were actually very close to peace. He had grown distant from Darrow because Darrow was off to war. A lot of low colors follow him fanatically, throwing themselves at enemies and basically suicide killing themselves in this decade-spanning war. He felt helpless for the people like Lyria, who were liberated from the mines but lived in slums still, only to be slaughtered by the Red Hand. Then he felt betrayed by Darrow because Darrow did an iron reign over Mercury instead of even telling the Republic about the peace offer. When Darrow's lie was revealed, he feared that Darrow had become a warmongering tyrant and that Virginia was in on it, or blinded by her love for Darrow, or whatever it may be. And when Virginia ambushed him with Darrow's mother, she should have presented her evidence better. Because for the Reds, being gay is illegal, and I assume it's... correctly that
it wasn't
it's
illegal,
breed.
It was just cultural taboo because of the Reds' culture. But well, I don't know if it
it's
was,
more
wasn't
so
illegal?
You're not biologically wired that way because the Golds made the Reds want to breed more. So it was more
yeah,
for...
they were like
yeah.
all down in the mines. Like
exactly.
Like they were kept like rabbits.
Well, exactly. they couldn't... The Golds could not afford homosexuality because they're like, no, we can't afford that. You need to all be breeding.
And
know?
So he changes...
That's the bottom line.
So
God,
he...
That's
yeah.
Author Andrew, everybody.
Homosexuality affects the bottom line.
So then he changed his mind because Virginia revealed that there was never a real offer of peace and that they were being tricked by the Queen of the Syndicate and he was being used by the Duke of Hands. So he realized that Darrow was actually right and the peace with the Ash Lord was not an option. So that's what stands. And based off Andrew's comment and this comment, hopefully that gives a bigger picture.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
I
a much.
Gotten a couple of the more intricate details.
Yeah, exactly, filling mm-hmm. those gaps.
But I think that still fits into like he's basically just getting outplayed.
Exactly.
He's not suited for.
Exactly.
And all he sees is it's all on fire, and my whole dream was to like put this fire out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Everybody I put into position is just fanning the flames.
Exactly that. Yeah. So Dancer in that way, Dancer never stood out to me in that way, but Dancer died, right? When did he die?
He died in Iron. Didn't
he? No.
When the Senator,
Dark Age.
He, remember they poisoned him. When,
oh, that's right. They poisoned him.
He's going to stand up and vote.
Day of Red Doves.
They're going to go. Yeah. The day of the Doves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, another fantastic scene. Oh.
That scene is great. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. The Dancer became like the, I mean, he's supposed to be the character we're most frustrated with, I think, really, in
yeah.
the book. Because obviously we know what Darrow knows, and also because we just are warmongers at that point.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, Iron Rain!
We all wanted it.
Well, it's the problem of we see their perspective, and we're looking at the rest of the Senators, and we think, Dancer, like, come, really, Dancer, you believe... Like, you believe the core goals? Come on, you're yeah. at the finish line. You're yeah. almost there.
But at the same time, it took 10 years and they had a decade of no progress, essentially. It's like, wow.
Yeah, no, so, I get it to yeah. a certain degree. It was just odd for me to say, like, his perspective was, hey, too many golds are dying, too many reds are dying, and this war just keeps going. Let's sue for something, or let's just try and protect our own. Let's leave them alone.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And then he found out that he is being manipulated. And to me, I was going, this still doesn't kind of like, he should still be like, hey, I still don't want more reds to die. Let's focus on protecting ourselves. But then he was like, no, we're going to go fight and free Legion. That's where I'm going.
I get you.
Wait,
I mean,
how does this?
A lot of the free Legion was reds.
Yeah. But he wasn't going to save him before. Now he is.
Yeah,
huh. I still expected him to kind of stick to that.
It's messy. I think that also part of it is like loyalty, right? Like I think like what that commenter was saying, where like he no longer believed in Darrow and he thought that Virginia was in on it, and Virginia is showing him like, no,
right?
I'm still who I was, and I'm fighting this thing. Because I remember he says something that's like, we will fight. You and I will disagree on everything for like in peace, but like you're my sovereign, and I am not going to let them tear the Republic apart from the inside out, or something. Like he has like a moment where like his loyalty seems to come back for
right.
her, and that's probably what that was, and it's probably just like a little murky and how
okay
like, you have to kind of intuit it. I think from what I remember, because I didn't even catch everything that commentator said, but I that makes sense to me.
Totally,
yeah,
totally. And I think the politics in the final book in Red God will be elevated even more, because I could see Atlantia and Mustang, how you were saying, Rich, at the beginning, having our Mustang Atlantia, figuring that out before Darrow and Lysander even get there.
I'm calling it here.
And
she's going to be working with Mustang is going to work with the Abomination to take down Atlantia.
I think that's implied.
Yeah, totally.
Isn't that implied in Lightbringer that she's getting information from somebody? And
it is. Yes. She has mysterious information that's 100% her brother.
And it's gotta be.
You're right. It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got this settled then. We know the ending of Red God.
We got it. We figured it out.
You may be right, though, that it'll actually end up being Darrow versus Lysander and Virginia versus Atalantia. Although, isn't Atalantia besieging Mars right now?
Yeah.
Because
Darrow so.
Has to come lift the siege. So he's going to have to be there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
that they do kind of square up in that way, where like Atalantia is manipulative, like Virginia. They played the same game, and they both have been the sovereign or dictator. And Lysander is trying to be the new Darrow, like the Darrow of the Golds. So
yeah.
In some ways, they're sort of competing to be the figure for each of those.
I will say, I'm actually very, very excited to see some Darrow and Mustang working together.
It's been too
page
long.
I need some of that.
Oh, it has been a long time.
They're always separated, doing their own thing, where I feel like they're a great power couple, that they would work great together. I want to see more of that, so I'm hoping
there's
we actually
scene
get that.
When Lorne first joins them in Golden Sun, and like Nero gets captured, or whatever, and like she comes in the shuttle, and mm-hmm. like they're like, all right, well, we got to get rid of the shuttle. It's probably bugged. And then she and Darrow have this conversation that's like not a real conversation. And then like they're like, okay, cool.
What just happened?
And and all the rest of them are like, oh yeah, this happens.
That's so great. And we keep getting teased, like in Lightbringer, they're right there. Daryl can come to Mars. He's right there. And then, yes, the smarter plan is don't come and get trapped. Go get help. Yes, smart, no. But damn it. Damn it.
What I really want to see is like Victra have her moment of revenge. Like Victra and Sevro, because I love Victra. I love Victra so much. She is one of my favorite characters. Because also she's like, she falls in that character, like that arc of like Tactus, right? Of like who can be redeemed. And Victra is one of the ones who can be redeemed.
Oh, I agree.
Right. And so whenever she gets to have her moment of like her cruel streak comes out, but it's cruel for mostly good, is like, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember reading like Iron Gold, Dark Age, where going through it, going, does Victra really belong in the Republic? A lot of times you're going like, why are you here? Why are you here, woman?
Her friendship.
Yeah, no, it personality-wise, she fits with the core Gold. Yes. But because she's friends and family with the Republic members, like that's why she's there. It's not because she believes in the Republic.
Yeah, she's
or
there
its
biologically.
Ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she would like, be.
So be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She'd be happy with either system.
Yes. Well, she would find a way to win at either system.
Yeah.
Which is all that she really cares about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because she, our intro to her in Golden Sun, she's very much loves Darrow. I don't know if it's a, it's,
oh, yeah,
it's also, it's also not a, creep, I don't know. Yeah. Not a creepy love. It's more of an endearing, like, yeah, Victra, you're pulling for him. Even in your death, look, when I thought she was dying, like before she acted, she didn't die, but that death scene of just like, it wasn't me, Darrow. It wasn't me. Just all she wanted him to know was, I was still with you to the end. That was important to her. Love that. Love that. That gives Victor's character so well.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Well, especially the fact that she was in love with him. And then when he chooses Mustang, she does not become like petty or angry about it. Then she like shifts her love of him to like, okay, then I love you like a brother. And like, in some ways, I think that she is the person he can trust the most.
Oh, wow.
Sevro is unpredictable, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, Mustang's probably the person he can trust the most. But in some ways, Victra understands his like primal side a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right? Like when they go into combat, when they go to kill like Roke, it's her with him. Right. Who does he take? Like, yes, he trusts Sevro to go do the other thing and he trusts Mustang to do a thing, but he takes Victra with him into the battle. And like that always really stuck with me of like, that's because like she is the most like him in a lot of ways.
Mm. I see that. And I think for Darrow to, well, Darrow obviously trusts Mustang the most, but and as well as Victra, but Victra's her loyalty has shifted a lot since being married to Sevro to her kids. And significantly, yeah. So obviously, like her kids are super important. I think that gets that most rageful moment when Ulysses was it?
Ulysses.
Ulysses dies as well. I hope Victra has a happy ending. I hope that no more of her kids die. Honestly, I'm pulling for several.
I know. Pierce Brown laid some groundwork of there's a lot of kids that could, like, they have a lot of kids.
True.
Like that's the thing. Pax, there's only one.
Do you think he made or have multiple kids just so there's more to kill off?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. He's like, I'm gonna need three moments from Victra. I'm gonna 1, 2, 3. Just what a ruthless. I don't know if he still does this, but we saw Pierce Brown at his Q&A. He did one nearby us, and he said at one point he would pull characters out of a hat to kill them. And he said he hasn't done that in a couple books, but he would do that just to see, like, ah, who's dying today? Did you hear about that?
Mad genius.
Right?
I love that. Honestly, that I love that because I love that sometimes that means it's hard to predict. Like, you can make anything work if you're a good enough writer, but, like, there's always the logical one to kill. Like, oh, right. This is the C character that, like, we all like, but, like, we won't miss him, right? And it's like, okay, yeah. Well, that's, like, the easy choice. Kill the one that shouldn't die, right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be shocked if Tactus was one of them.
And he also has the people around him. I think it was his editor, Rich or Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but when it came to his Golden Sun moment, his first draft of Golden Sun before we saw that big death scene, but everybody dying, the editor got it, read it, and went, in the first draft, more people need to die. This isn't devastating enough. And so he added on more people to kill. I don't know who was in that first draft versus what we got to read, but apparently more people died and different people died. That's what I heard. So the people around him are also encouraging. More of this. And yeah, lovely. Lovely. Now, Andrew, do you want to end off this predictions episode with any final say on this is your chance to stamp it down? Like, I don't know when Red God's going to come out. He said soon. I'm thinking 2025. That's my best guess.
You think so? End of 2024 type
I could
deal?
See it, but I think it's too soon. It's already end of January. I think he'd have
You said he had to split Lightbringer, right? That it was going to be one and he turned it into two.
Two, yes.
Yeah.
So you never know if that means that a bunch of it was already written.
Yes, true.
What was the moment he decided to split?
True.
That depends. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that speeds it up. Sometimes that slows it down.
Right. Well, what do you have any final prediction that you want to put into the bucket here? Be like, I called it.
I think that Darrow is going to end up with the Lightbringer again.
I see that.
Right. That ship has passed hands and... Yeah. You know, Loon took it to like become the new Darrow. And I think that when he actually, maybe Atalanio dies last because maybe he kills Loon and he takes back the Lightbringer and he names it Pax. And that is what he takes into the final battle against her.
Okay.
Maybe he puts Pax in charge of the Lightbringer that he's now Pax has been training to be a pilot and all this stuff. And he is the new to take charge, the new captain of the Lightbringer.
Is that you're going to join him? That's your prediction as well?
No, I still think... two things.
Yeah.
One, I don't think we've seen the last of Quicksilver.
No. No, we've not.
Something's coming.
I actually do think we've seen the last of Quicksilver, but I'm intrigued.
I want to. I feel like there's something. Quicksilver's going to have some type of deus ex machina to save the day. Something's going to come out. Some meteor is going to hit Mars and people are going to freak out. And then they're going to go to the meteor and go like, oh my God, it's these awesome weapons, robots and everything. Like Quicksilver sent that just last minute.
I could see it.
But also I think the Abomination will actually be saved and kind of raised like Pax's brother. And Mustang will actually raise her brother the right way.
Okay. That I think you're I don't agree, but I we'll see. We'll stamp this. We'll know by the time the book's written. I also your theory that you found about Figment.
Yeah.
That one I like.
That's the best one so far. And Andrew, I want to give you any last second to promote all your stuff, tell them where they can find you, and then we'll get out of people's hair.
All right. Yeah, well, if you like BookTube stuff, I have a YouTube channel called Give Reads. You can find me there. If you like urban fantasy, you can find me under Andrew Givler or Soul Fraud on Amazon. And also make sure you hit the like button, subscribe to these guys.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Bye-bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.